Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I'd say get a pad of paper handy because we're going to be sharing some fascinating health information with you today, and I know you're going to want to write down some details for your own records. If any one of you listening today have known of someone that has had a major disease like fibromyalgia, MS, anything like this, you know how difficult their lives are. Well, my guest today, Elaine A. Dulac, is a woman who has gone through a personal journey. But her journey ended up causing her to become an investigator of type, and she has affected the lives of thousands of people. And I like to think that through the show today, she'll affect the lives of even more. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Donna.
Now, you are in the state of Washington, and what community in Washington are you residing in at this time?
In Stanwood, up by Lake Goodwin, Smoky Point, that area.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book is titled, They Said It Didn't Make Sense, C-E-N-T-S, MS, The Prokaren Story. I'd like for you to give us a background on your journey, because originally you came from Helena, Montana.
Correct. I was a ranch girl. I lived on a ranch all my life, and it was our family-owned ranch and was used to working from sunup to sundown. And then when I was pregnant with my son, I started to have these symptoms where I'd wake up in the middle of the night and couldn't move my left leg, couldn't feel it. And after my son was born, the symptoms started to increase throughout the day, and pretty soon I had numbness all the way to my knee, and my knee would, would kind of want to buckle, and my left hand didn't want to work, and I had horrendous fatigue. So I went from a person who was used to working on the ranch from sunup to sundown to a person who could barely make a bed and dinner in the same day.
I've known, Elaine, of people that have had MS and how debilitating it is for the individual, and in fact, Montel Williams suffers from MS, and he's a former Navy SEAL, I believe. And this is a man that his journey, he's incredibly physical. You'd never know by looking at him that he has this. He has taken incredible care of himself. So it is non-discriminating. I mean, it attacks people of various ages. But is the area of country, are there more cases of MS, like in Montana, in the Northwest, on the West Coast, than in other parts of the country?
Well, it's interesting, Donna, what you talk about, like with the physique of Montel Williams, et cetera. And interestingly, those people, like myself, who are a real driver, overachiever, perfectionist, a type A personality, a go-go type person, who wants mm-hmm. to look totally like they've got it all together on the outside, but they're kind of a wreck on the inside, feel that their worth is what they can accomplish in a day, et cetera, those people are actually the highest percentage of people that end up developing this disease. And the reason I find from my research is because that puts an undue chronic stress on your body. And that stress, there's where this enzyme that we become deficient in is inhibited by stress. And so when you put this chronic stress on yourself, such as a type A personality would do, you just keep this constant inhibition on this enzyme. And finally, the enzyme's activity becomes so low that you start to manifest disease. As far as where a person lives or not, they've done a lot of research and have found that there are MS is much more prevalent further away from the equator, both north and south. Of course, it looks like it's more north because you run out of land going south.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's more about 35, 65 degree latitudes. They see kind of like these big bands of MS. You'll also see MS is much more prevalent in your Caucasians. And the reason I find for that is that First off, with the Caucasians, it's been predominantly a Caucasian disease. We're just starting to see it come up in the darker-skinned people. The reason is genetically, the lighter-skinned you are, the fairer-skinned you are, like the Scandinavian stuff, real heavy with MS, the fairer-skinned you are, the more risk you are at developing MS because you genetically have less of this enzyme activity. This enzyme that we eventually become deficient in is also the enzyme that makes us make melanin, our skin pigmentation. Mm-hmm. So if you're darker skinned, you already have more of that genetically more of that activity of that enzyme than a person who's fair skinned. As far as living away from the equator, what happens is this enzyme, which makes histamine 2 is very, very important in the workings of what we call the pineal gland in the brain, a little tiny gland right smack dab in the center of the brain. And that gland, histamine 2, is the only chemical stimulator of that gland. Now, what they found is that the body has a backup system. So if you don't have enough of this enzyme, so you can't make enough histamine 2 to turn that pineal gland on, your body has a backup system, and that is ultraviolet light directly hitting the retina of your eye, and that will stimulate that gland. So the closer you are to the equator, the more direct the light is onto the eyes, the less you're going to see of MS because you can use that backup system.
Now, just from what you've discussed, you obviously are a woman that has educated yourself. You are a nurse, which I think is very, very important. Tell us how you got in to doing so much of the research. Now, as a younger individual, you had planned on going into medicine. You had planned on getting involved in research. In fact, you were fascinated with it when you were first starting into college, weren't you?
Yeah, I absolutely. I've always wanted to be a doctor. I doctored all my pets, all my horses. I mean, if they weren't sick, I pretended they were sick and I was going to doctor them. I absolutely loved that kind of thing. And I wanted to go on either to be a doctor or a veterinarian, but didn't see myself going through all that schooling and doing all that studying. Needless to say, the last 14 years, that's all I've done is study and research. But so I went on to be a nurse. And what even sent me on to this, to get into research, I really was never, you know, that wasn't my interest. I wanted to fix people. I didn't want to learn why they were sick. I wanted to actually fix them. And but when I came down with MS, and I was forced to go and do research to try and find something to help myself because the doctors had nothing to offer me. They simply said, go home, get your sleep, and eat well. Well, I already knew I needed to do that to even begin to think to function. So I started studying research, and I researched research, and I like to, I guess I'm just very analytical, and what I like to do is kind of treat it like a jigsaw puzzle. You take your symptoms, because I really believe our symptoms are how our body's talking to us and telling us, look, this is what's going wrong, and so I'd take symptoms, and I'd work them backwards, and I'd actually look for what could cause that symptom you know, if something went awry in the body. And I take it all the way down to the cellular level. And the first symptom I started looking at was heat, because that is the most classic symptom to a person with MS. In fact, that's how they used to diagnose a person. They used to put them in a hot tub of water, and if their symptoms got worse, they got the diagnosis of MS. So I started first studying heat. And what I found was, I started to study, okay, how does the body normally handle heat? And they showed that then at these healthy normal rats, that when they heated them up, like in an incubator, their histamine 2 production went up, and that histamine 2 increased the water content to the brain, cooling the brain. It would make sodium ions go across the blood-brain barrier into the brain, and that, of course, sodium pulls water with it and increasing the water content to the brain, cooling the brain, just like your radiator system does in your car. That opens up and the water circulates around the engine, cooling the engine. Same thing. When they block that histamine 2 production with an H2 blocker like cimetidine, it caused dehydration of the brain. Interestingly, there's a disease out there, a very rare disease, called osmotic myelinolysis, which is caused by not enough sodium to the brain. And you know it's identical to MS. all the symptoms,
oh, everything
is identical. So then how would they make a determination? As you say, it's an extremely rare condition, and someone making a diagnosis, I mean, most doctors today are not spending more than 10 minutes with a patient. So once you're slapped with a diagnosis of, gee whiz, you've got MS, and maybe you have this other condition, how in the world, what can people do? I mean, how can they address these questions? What if someone had this situation in the brain? How would they know the questions to ask?
Yeah, unfortunately, they wouldn't unless their doctor weren't looking. And there probably are a lot of MS patients that actually have that condition. The unfortunately, this is a very big injustice that's happened with our healthcare system. Our doctors are too quick to label a person with a diagnosis of MS. Because, in fact, I was being interviewed one time by Dr. Alexandra Berger, who works in Washington, D.C., and I was saying that, you know, I think MS is a dumping diagnosis. And she leaned forward and whispered, and she said, do you want to know why doctors are quick to diagnose a person with MS? And I said, yeah, I'd like to know. She goes, because they can never be proven right or wrong. Because we don't have any definite diagnostic criteria for MS. It's still simply on the symptoms. And so when a person goes into an office and they have insurance and they are seeing this doctor, if that doctor doesn't put a diagnosis down on that billing form, they're not going to get paid for it. And so they put multiple sclerosis on there. Now, that might be all right in the very beginning, but don't just say, you know, I mean, neurological of unknown etiology or something like that, because the minute somebody gets a diagnosis of MS, from that point on, they try and make everything you get. You stub your toe, oh, you've got MS. They don't believe you can have anything else, and the trouble is they quit looking for anything else. Now, MS looks like lots of other diseases. You know, a lot of your neurological diseases look similar in the very beginning, but as the diseases progress, they start to take on specific characteristics, such as Parkinson's. And MS can look very, very similar in the very early beginning, but as they go on, they develop very typical different symptoms, such as your Parkinson's patient gets a real wide shuffled gait, your MS patient gets a scissor gait where they almost want to trip themselves up. Your MS patient becomes heat sensitive, your Parkinson's patient doesn't. Your Parkinson's patient gets resting tremors where, you know, the head or hands will tremor just at rest, like on your laying on your lap, where an MS patient only gets intention tremors where they reach out to do something and then they have a tremor.
You had some very unique, what do I want to say, synchronistic situations that enabled you to become this researcher. And because of the way that you think and what you were going through as an individual with this debilitating condition, which kept getting worse and worse. In fact, your son Mark was just a tiny little thing, and all of a sudden your legs went out from under you, and you were just terrified because nobody... here you were, your body suddenly wasn't functioning. Tell us about Dr., and correct me if I'm pronouncing it wrong, Dr. Bjork.
Dr. Bjork.
Bjork.
B-J-O-R-K.
Yes.
Donna, I've had some, in all of this, a guidance from wherever, you know, whatever you want to call the higher power, God, whatever, you know, you believe in. But when I got my diagnosis of MS, I at first didn't want to believe it, so I came out to Washington and got a second diagnosis and second opinion, and they said, you have MS, and sent me back home again. I received a phone call upon getting back to Helena from a lady to this day, I don't know who she was. She told me to contact Dr. Bjork. He was a doctor in my hometown of Helena, Montana. I'd never met him. He had MS himself, and he had been experimenting on himself using vitamin B12 and adenosine monophosphate injections. I called the number, and I spoke with his wife. I never was able to speak with the doctor. 3 days later, I get a prescription in the mail for adenosine monophosphate injections and B12.
Now, I wasn't a nurse at the time. I hadn't completed my nursing. I'd taken actually a year off to get married, et cetera. And so I didn't want to do the injections, so I just went with the B12. I just started doing B12 orally, thinking I was doing, well, half of what the doctor had wanted me to do. Well, I continued to get worse and moved out to Washington in 1990 and was really having problems with the move, the stress of the move, et cetera. And so I found a doctor who was willing to, Dr. Bjork had passed away by this time at the age of 81, so I found a family physician here locally who was willing to do that prescription for that Dr. Bjork had written for adenosine monophosphate and B12. I did get better. My fatigue got better. My cognition got better. I didn't have that cognitive fog anymore. And I still had all my left side weakness. I still had to get at least 10 hours of sleep. I still had to avoid stress to be able to function and stuff. But I was well enough that I felt I could go back and finish my nursing. I went back, finished my nursing, started working as a nurse, and tried to get other doctors to do what Dr. Bjork had done. But they all said, oh, there's no medical documentation as to why this works. So I went back to school and took a research course to get this research that they wanted, and just had to learn how to actually do research, how to actually read research. And from that research and learning how to do that research is how I developed Procarin.
The journey that you've gone through in the development of Procarin, and we're going to be sure towards the bottom of the hour to give out the information on how people can reach you with this. Your book, which again is The Truth Exposed, They Said It Didn't Make Sense, C-E-N-T-S, M-S, The Procarin Story. You had no idea that you were going to end up on a journey that would take you through so many twists and turns in a profession that you really do love. You really have a passion for making a difference in people's lives. You worked on yourself first, and then going into the research, that opened up a whole different world for you. And in doing this, you were very disillusioned by a lot of the things that you saw, weren't you?
Oh, if I was starting nursing right now, in my first quarter of nursing, and I knew what I know today, I would never have gone into healthcare. Healthcare in this country is horrendous. It is, you know, and we've got the public all believing that we've got their best interests at hand, that we are the best, we provide the best health care in the world. No, we have very good theatrical, heroic care, you know. We can keep a 1-pound preemie alive. In fact, there was just in the paper, we got a 10-ounce preemie. We kept a 10-ounce preemie alive. But yet we have the highest infant mortality rate of the 13 top industrialized nations. Excuse me. We are horrible at health. We are horrible at prevention. And it all stems because we are an illness-driven system. We've always been an illness-driven system. Illness is a commodity in this country. And you know what? They're going to protect illness because it's their bread and butter. And I have seen this now as a patient. I've seen it as a nurse. I've witnessed insurance companies strong-arming doctors. I've witnessed hospitals strong-arming doctors because they were being strong-armed by insurance companies. And if I were to give one message to the people, listeners today, is do not put your health care provider on a pedestal. Do not think that health care provider is strictly looking out for your best interests. You must question everything. Do your due diligence. Don't just take everything at blind faith. I see it. People come into a hospital situation or, you know, anytime when they're in acute illness, and you just see them. They just renege all of their control. They just hand it over and just become this blind sheep. And don't do it. I lost my nephew because of that, and I swear to my just a few months ago, just before Thanksgiving, and I swear his death will not be in vain. His death was due to either negligence of the healthcare system or the insurance company strong-arming the doctor to not do the proper protocol.
You found that the financial factor that was dictating the decisions and actions of medical professionals really was quite appalling. You approached a number of different organizations because you wanted them to know what you had discovered. Tell us about what you had discovered and how you were able to patent it.
Well, I didn't even understand the patent process. The reason I even went to get a patent for the Procarin was I approached the National MS Society, and Dr. Stephen Reingold hung up on me when he found out I was a nurse. So then I thought, okay, fine, I'll just do the study myself and I'll prove it to you. So I applied for a grant. Well, found out that you have to be a doctor to be a grant. So I went to several doctors, and they wanted to be the principal investigator for this study, but their conglomerate that they worked for said no, wouldn't let them do it. So I thought, okay, fine, I'll go to an actual pharmaceutical company that's doing research in MS. So the first one I went to was ICOS, right here in Bothell, it's close by. And I went there, sent them all my stuff, and I actually got back their interdepartmental notes, and it said, you know, we think this will work on MS, but we're not interested because we don't think it's patentable. So I went to a patent attorney. I said, okay, what do I have to do? Nobody will look at this unless it's patentable. So people need to understand there's two types of patents. There is a molecular patent, and that's where you make your own little synthetic molecule, and you hold it close to your chest, and you have the recipe, and nobody else can copy it. That's what the drug companies like. Then there's what we call the use patent, and that is where you patent something that maybe is old, has been, is now off patent, or is a natural occurring molecule, so it's not patentable. But you patent it for a certain use, such as for MS or for, you know, some indication. And that's how I got the Procarin patented, because Procarin is histamine diphosphate and caffeine citrate, both very old chemicals that have been around for a long time. Histamine diphosphate's been around since 1911, but nobody had ever used the two in combination for MS. So I got a patent on it and went back. Well, instead of going to ICOS, I thought, well, I didn't have any luck with them, and so I went to Berlex, the makers of beta serum, the first drug that was approved for MS. And they said, oh, you know what, you're going 180 degrees different direction than everybody else. We need to see a feasibility study. So I went, did a second mortgage on my house, funded a feasibility study to the tune of $80,000+, and proved it. Now, that's when the MS Society then came after me, and they said, oh, that's just a little study. We need to see a double-blind study. I said, okay, fine. So I raised the money, raised $187,000, and I did a double-blind study. And I went back and met with the MS Society to make sure that I had all the criteria they wanted in that study. And then I went to Bastyr University, and I paid them to design the study. And the director of research at Bastyr University is actually on the National Institutes of Health Advisory Council. And they devised the study, and I had it passed through three institutional review boards for good scientific design, etc. Then I got it published in the Multiple Sclerosis Research Journal, which is a peer-reviewed journal, so it had to go through their peer review and said, yes, this was good, clean science, and yes, it does definitely show efficacy and should be published. And the National MS Society came out and discredited that study before they even saw the study. They called me at 1 o'clock in the afternoon Pacific time, which would have been 4 o'clock Eastern time, and Dr. LaRocca from the National MS Society, and asked for a copy of the study, and I said, I don't have it yet. It just left the printers. The media embargo just lifted. And he said that, you know, he'd like to see it. They're getting all these calls because we'd also released a video news release on it. And I said, well, when I get the off prints, I'll be happy to send them to you. That was at 4 o'clock his time. By the next morning, 8 o'clock my time, I get a call from my PR person, and she said, oh, my gosh, you know, wait till you see the news.
They have come out and totally discredited the story, the study the National MS Society has. They said they had their whole clinical review board look at it and decide that it was, you know, poorly designed, etc. Now, you tell me, how did they do that without even having the study and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon get this review board together and look at a study that they didn't have?
You have not given up, though. People are able to find out about Procarin, your book, The Truth Exposed. They said it didn't make sense, MS, the Procarin story. People are able to get this. Am I correct, the Procarin?
Yeah, absolutely. It requires a prescription. It has to be by a certain licensed compounding pharmacy. And the pharmacy where I get my Procarin from, up in Bellingham, Custom Prescription Shop, they'll give you the first month free. You can see if it'll work for you. You will know in the first month if Procarin's going to work for you. And if you're heat sensitive, those people respond the best.
Now, Elaine, I want my listeners to know about your website so that they can write this information down and they can have that available to them, because I think it pays to be informed. I think your book is absolutely fabulous, and I would hope, I know you're going to be going to California to do another research program, but I would hope that doctors would be able to have access to this, because there are those caring physicians. There are those people in the medical profession that would love to see some changes in their own health environment, healthcare, you know, situation. And every step that they can take forward is a significant one. What is your website that people can go to, Elaine?
Go to www.edmsllc.com.
That's E like Edward, D like Donna, M like Mary, S like Sam, LLC.com. EDMSLLC.com. And you can find out about her book. You can find out about her experience and what she went through. Elaine, you have a passion for making this world a better place. You want people to be well. I know we've got about a minute and a half. What message would you like to leave with my listeners today?
Well, the first thing is to do your due diligence. I'm actually putting together a health team right now that will be available for people 24/7. They can call them, ask them all their questions. So they're not just out there floundering on their own saying, oh, I heard this on the Internet that this is good for me, or I saw this on the TV, or I heard my friend's taking this. You can get yourself in a lot of trouble. You can actually supplement yourself into illness if you're not careful. They need some help. They need direction, because what's out there is not always the wellness-driven. It may be, and most likely is, dollar-driven.
Now, with this, is there, with this team that you're putting together, how will people be able to find out about this kind of a health team?
Well, we're just in the stages of putting it together. It's a very expensive process. In fact, I'm going for a grant right now, because it'll cost me about $950,000 to do it. But then we will start, you know, marketing out to the public. But it'll be available to them for as cheap as $15 a day. I mean, $15 a month, you know, equivalent to a Starbucks once a week, in that you can call, you'll have this team available to you 24/7. The reason I want to do it is just like what happened with my nephew. You need somebody that can be as a liaison, that is not, has no bias from the pharmaceutical companies, the insurance companies, or even the medical provider who's providing treatment, because it's revenue generated.
Well, Elaine Delac, I think that your journey is going to consistently be interesting. I'm so delighted that you were my guest, and you must let me know when you get this team together, because I want to let my listeners know about that again. Elaine Delac, D-E-L-A-C-K is her name. Her book, A Must Read. They said it didn't make sense. MS, the Procarin story. Her journey, is a fascinating one, and your education will be sadly lacking if you don't read it. This is Donna Sebo. Elaine, thank you again for being my guest.
Thank
this
you.
Is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and I do want to give out Elaine Delac's her website again. It's edmsllc.com. And her book is so very, very significant. I feel so fortunate that I'm able to share information with you because there is so much that is put out in front of us as individuals, and we're bombarded with certain points of information over and over and over and over again to such a degree that we think often that it is the truth. And I go back to something that was said to me when I was 13 years old by a physician. And his name was Dr. Bloom, and I had just such a deep affection for this man. He just was absolutely wonderful as a doctor, loved his profession. But he himself had gone through some very serious health issues, and he made a point to me, and I was very young. He said, Donna, people are going to have to question doctors. They're going to have to question the system. Now, this is so many years ago. I was just in my early teens. Little did I realize that it would come full circle, if you will, to a time when we've gone through periods where we thought we've found this miracle drug, that miracle, whatever, and we're finding out the information is faulty. We are finding out that we have to question, we have to investigate. And here is a woman, Elaine Delac, who has done exactly that. She was afflicted with something. She had the mental acumen, the drive and the desire to go and do the research. How many of us are going to do that? I'm not necessarily going to do it. That's not my expertise, per se. But this is a woman who had a passion for study and for science. And she went after it, advancing her education and utilizing those skills of hers and questioning. It's so important to question. And I encourage you, if you ever want to know about any kind of a drug or anything else, talk to your pharmacist. You know, your pharmacist can be one of your best friends. And I know in our own family, we've had situations where if we hadn't questioned a pharmacist, we would have perhaps done ourselves some physical harm. And this is something that is so important. Don't undervalue yourself. And I think, and I've had this from other guests that I've had on my show, we need to remember we need to have advocates. If someone is ill, there has to be someone there that can speak for you. It's so very, very important. And again, I feel so fortunate because through this programming, we're able to bring this information to you. And if you want to share this, just know the show is going to be archived so that you're going to be able to share it with friends. Just know you can. That's what we want you to know here at bbsradio.com. It's very, very important that you realize that your wellness is up to you to really pay attention to. Go after paying attention to who you are. Go after staying well. Don't wait until you get sick. Life happens sometimes, just like it did with her. And her story is a fascinating one, so you should add it to your library. By the way, telephone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a buzz, I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227 is the telephone number to call in to. 877-876-5227. If you're calling in from Canada, 888-810-8322 is the number. That's 888-810-8322. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So those phone lines are open if you would like to call in and chat with me. Now, I wanted to share a little bit of information with you today regarding some information on creative lending. And, you know, David Horowitz is a man that has just so much knowledge. He researches in so many different issues about money. And I wanted to share some of the points of information that he had in a particular article. He said he was reporting about an upsurge in the type of mortgage fraud in which eager borrowers inflate their income and net worth to qualify for a home loan. And what happens is the borrower often gets into trouble when he or she can't meet the monthly obligation, which can then force the lender to foreclose on the loan. Well, the creative lending style that some of the popular forms of mortgages facilitated, if not actually encouraged, what is now known as liar loans. Mm-hmm. This was something that I was not familiar with, the term a liar loan. Now, they're a byproduct of a stated income loan and other limited documentation mortgages aimed at the self-employed individual. These are people that, again, are self-employed, they're applicants, and it allows the people to bypass standard underwriting requirements. Now, these types of loans often don't require copies of W-2 forms or other proof of income or income tax records. The borrower only has to assure the loan officer that he or she earns enough to qualify for the mortgage without any kind of documented proof. Now, in my experience, even though I was self-employed, we always had to have documentation, any bank we went to. So as a result, application fraud, dependent on the lender, has become an estimated multi-billion dollar problem each year with falsified income tax filings an important factor. Well, the IRS now is cracking down. It's attempting to make it easier for lenders to confirm an applicant's information and to avoid fraud. Lenders are going to be able to request transcripts from the IRS that summarize an applicant's income and tax data as far back as 4 years. And they say this should not only uncover but also deter liar loan applicants. Fascinating stuff. But that is something that has evolved. So if this is a process that perhaps you or someone you know is thinking of doing, the IRS is definitely going to be cooperating with banks on a whole new level. So Be wise if you're out there looking for that special benefit or a special way for creative lending. There are going to be ways of checking up on background now. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. I want to let you know also that I have got a wonderful lineup of people. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the small business owner. Yes. We're going to be talking about a marketing handbook for you that I think you'll find quite interesting. Gina Poole is going to be my guest. And then if you feel sometimes like your life is in a vice and you need some space for yourself, Bob Buccio is going to be giving us some good insights for that. And then Jennifer Loudon is going to be following up on Friday, and we're going to tell you how you can organize your life so that you feel like you have some things under control. You don't want to be that extreme type A personality where you feel like you've got to control everything in your life, but you do want to have some semblance of organization, and we will be chatting about that this week. So just tell your friends about the programs, and of course you can always check on the VBS website for the guests that are upcoming, and you can always go in and check my newsletter on my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you can check and see where I'm appearing, what my schedule is going to be. And for those of you in New York, I'm going to be on a business trip to New York at the end of the month. It's going to be a very, very, very condensed and tight trip time-wise, but I will be available for consultations while I'm back there. So if you need to reach me, call me at 800-872-8852. Also, I'm going to be appearing at the Women's Show. This is a busy month, on the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And that I'm just looking forward to because it is so much fun. I've been involved for a few years now, and it's just a dynamic women's event. It is being held at Quest Field, and the hours are from 10 till 6. My booth number is 406, and we are just going to be having a blast. Stop by the booth and say hello. I would love to meet you. Donna Sebo here, 877-876-5227. If you want to call in from Canada, 888-810-8322 is the telephone number. I had some information that was sent to me regarding identity theft, and I thought I would share a little bit of that with you because there is a need to be alert and aware. So I'm going to just share a couple of points. You need to remember, and I know that so many of you are savvy about this, but this is from a gentleman who was very much involved with identity theft, and he passed along his information and his experience saying, pay attention. And this is something that you really need to listen to. Always shred your personal documents that you no longer need. Discarding them in a wastebasket is not sufficient. Between the garbage bin and the incinerator that the processing system utilizes, someone can collect your documents and obtain your personal information. And above all, if you suspect that your information has been compromised, issue a fraud alert immediately to the reporting bureaus. Your credit report will be sent to you if that is requested. Also, you want to be sure to restrict the access to your personal data by signing up for the National Do Not Call Registry. If you do get any solicitous calls, never give any personal information to the caller, especially your Social Security number and your mother's maiden name. Well, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Hey, give me a buzz if you want to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. 1-800-327-7297. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
McDonald's Northwest Women's Show is a show that's all about you, your body, your spirit, your life. Hundreds of exhibits, 5 entertainment stages, and best of all, shopping. Hear Marianne Williamson, Oprah's expert on spiritual guidance, love, and miracles, and celebrity fitness guru and author Bob Green. March 23rd through 25th, 10 till 6 daily at Quest Field Event Center. McDonald's Northwest Women's Show. It's such a girl thing. Show information at nwwomenshow.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, or in Canada, 888-810-8322. And all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and you're welcome then to ask me a question about anything that you like. I am a real softie when it comes to puppies, and when I came across this particular story, I just had to share it because it is absolutely marvelous. We adopted 2 Scottish Terriers last year, and man, oh man, I never knew that so much dirt could come into my house on their little paws, but they are such a joy, and when you bring animals into your space, I don't care if it's a ferret, a cat, a dog, it doesn't make any difference. They really add so much to your life. And yes, they are additional work. It's just like bringing kids into your house. But they really bring a lot. And I think that this story about this wonderful, wonderful lady, by this lady, Linda Sirico, she just shared this story about her dog, a 1-in-a-million pup, and I thought I've got to just bring the light of this today because it is just wonderful. She said she had about a dream about 5 years ago that encouraged her to go to a specific shelter and adopt a particular dog. Now, in this dream, she said she was aware that she was going to know the dog by something unusual about its face. But every time she woke up from this recurring dream, she could never recall what it was. It was going to be so special about this dog. Well, because this dream kept coming back to her, she felt like she had to follow the instructions. So one morning, she went to the particular shelter that was shown to her in the dream. And she went around and looked at all the dogs. And she was so disappointed that there wasn't a one that she saw that had an unusual face. She said there were lots of cute puppies and appealing older dogs, but there wasn't a connection with any of them. Well, she happened to spy a box of puppies, and there was this one puppy that appeared to have no fur on his face at all, while the rest of the puppies were all black with spots of white. Now, these puppies were a mix. They were a mix of a black lab and Chesapeake Bay Retriever. And each of the puppies had been named after a type of pasta. Isn't it hilarious? After a type of pasta. Now, the one that had captured her interest was called Fettuccine. And she said, when she examined the puppy, his face did have fur, but it was a strange kind of gray that made it look like skin. And all of a sudden, it was like a bell went off in her head. She said, this is the dog with the unusual face. So she picks the puppy out of the box. And she said his very large paws reached over her shoulders to cling to her back. And they bonded just instantaneously, Linda and this little puppy. Well, she took the baby home and named him Dominic. She kept Fettuccine as his middle name. And she said he was just marvelous. From the very beginning, he was so obedient and extremely intelligent, very attentive to her, and before long, he was just the most precious companion she could ever want to have. Now, when he was 2 years old, something started happening with Linda. She began to have seizures, and she ended up being diagnosed with a particular disorder relating to the seizures, and she was starting to have grand mal seizures as well as milder petite mal seizures. And she said what would occur whenever they hit her, she would just collapse into an unconscious situation. Now, when she would awaken, she would always find Dominic on top of her. And she said, I wasn't really happy when this started happening to me. I mean, who would be happy about a 90-pound dog laying on top of them? However, what she came to realize is that the reason that Dominic was lying on top of her was she was unconscious, but because she was having a seizure, by him being on top of her, she wasn't going to hurt herself. He was able, because of the sheer weight of his body, to keep her from thrashing around and hurting herself. So he would be just so attentive to her when she was having any kind of seizure. When she had a mild seizure, she would be able to hold on to his front legs until the seizure would pass, and he would know when they were coming. So he would always make sure he was real close by. And she found, she began to rely on him because he would let her know when something was coming on. He could sense it long before she could experience it and would stay right there with her until the seizure passed. And she said, during my worst period, I had 5 grand mal seizures a day. But the force of the seizures and the physical injuries I received were minimal because her dog would respond to her immediately. She said, here's this puppy, the dog I have, Dominic. She said, I was led to in a dream, turned out to be a natural-born seizure assistance dog, a 1-in-a-million pup with astounding instincts. Now, after a year of going through these horrendous seizures, she said she's now well and she's seizure-free. And she said, my wonderful Dominic has returned to his regular doggy activities, but she said he always keeps an eye on me and he's always letting me know that if ever I need his help, he's there to assist. And she said, it's amazing how important it is to him that he be able to help me in some way. And she said, you know, there are heroes in life that sometimes wear a badge or have a particular kind of uniform. But she said, my hero has fur. Wonderful, wonderful dog. And I've got a picture of the puppy there. And I think that there's these wonderful gifts many times that we're given in life. And sometimes they're through animals. And we need to honor them and respect them. Oh, I hear it beep. Well, I think we've got a caller here. Hello, caller.
Hi, Donna.
Hi, first name or initial, and where are you calling from?
E from Tacoma.
Hi, E. My goodness, we've only got about a minute, hon, so I'm going to be moving along pretty quickly here with you. E, what I want you to be aware of is you've got your work cut out for you, and you want to be sure that you really follow through and finish all of what I'd call the small details that maybe you just as soon ignore, but take care of having closure on everything that needs to be closed out and finalized. Don't assume anything. You've got an absolutely awesome summer in front of you, but I want you to pay attention to what's going on in your life. It really is going to make a difference. Now, I know we've only got about a minute, hon. Do you have a question for me?
Yeah, I'm thinking of selling my house, and I wondered what you thought for that.
Well, what I'd recommend that you do, I think you're going to get a good price on it, but you've got some things that you need to work out. Have someone come out and inspect your house to see if there are some things that need to be tended to in the way of repairs. Get that analysis. I don't think your house will be on the market for very long once you put it up. Do your homework first.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, hon. I'm sorry we're almost out of time here. Otherwise, I'd be happy to chat with you longer.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, the hour's just flown by. Thank you so much for being with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. And hey, tomorrow you're not going to want to miss it. We're going to be talking about small business and how you can do a better marketing job for yourself. Have a fabulous day wherever you are. God bless. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.